We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
All right, guys, rolling along with our AL East previews. Thanks for joining us again. My friend Kevin Weiss from Locked On Rays is joining us to talk a little Tampa Bay Rays and find out what's going on in their neck of the woods. They had a hell of a year down in Tampa, not only with the Rays, but across all, really all sports. It's been a good sports year for the Tampa sports fan. So, Kevin, what's up, man? Welcome back.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Buccaneers win a Super Bowl, the Lightning win a Stanley Cup, the Rays got an AL championship, couldn't quite get the World Series, but there's always next year. And then you've got other teams coming down. I mean, we get to watch NBA basketball all season long at Amalie Arena where the Lightning play. The Dunedin Blue Jays. I mean, the Toronto Blue Jays are basically going to be playing in Dunedin for a couple months. So a lot of opportunities to just watch sports and actually go to games too. I think over the past month or so, some of those organizations have opened up things a little bit, limited capacity and so forth. But with the rollout of vaccines, we're actually, I mean, this as we stand late March going into April, it seems like there is some normalcy returning, which is nice to see after all the mess of 2020.
Yeah, no doubt, for real. Well, what's the situation over at the Trop with the fans? Yankee Stadium's at 20% right now. Just like a 48-hour period of proving that you have a COVID test, a negative test, and all of these things. So what's happening at the Trop? How are they letting everybody in? I think it's a little bit more relaxed from what I've heard, but what's the situation there?
Yeah, we are in Florida, so things tend to be a little bit more relaxed. I don't know anything about like a negative COVID test or requiring that you show a vaccine. I believe masks are required. Unless you're actively eating or drinking inside the Trop. But they said originally that they were going to cap attendance to start the season at 7,000, but then they made another announcement that they bumped it up to 9,000. So as many as, I guess they always change the capacity around with the tarps and everything, but yeah. I'd guess that's about 25, 30% capacity. And I'm sure as the months go forward, I would not be surprised by the end of the season if they open it up completely. But that's what we're looking at, 9,000 fans to start. And hopefully the Rays can call themselves getting a sellout or several sellouts. Hopefully they can fill 9,000 into the seats, especially this early part of the season. I mean, if you can't get 9,000 in the building, especially after as people are clamoring to go to the games after what the Rays did last season, then let's just move to Montreal already. Let's just close up shop, because that would be, quite frankly, an embarrassment, especially as, I mean, people are getting vaccines left and right here, which is a good sign too.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, the tarps are a situation where they can control, you know, the attendance for a particular game, whether there's a limited capacity or not. So, for baseball's sake, I hope that they're able to pack it with, 9,000 fans or 7,000 fans or whatever it is. And I also have a feeling that you're going to get a higher percentage of visiting fans that come in too, because everybody is jonesing for baseball.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that, it's funny because I was driving down Dale Mabry yesterday after a Yankee spring training game just ended, and it was just absolutely packed. And again, that's Yankees fans, but I think you're still going to, I mean, for better or worse, you've got a lot of transient fans down here, whether it's Red Sox, Yankees. A lot of people are vacationing, if not moving down here or staying down here, because things have been so relaxed and opened up. So even if it's, look, you'd like to see 100% Rays fans in the Trop, but I feel like you have enough people this time of year that, if it's, you got a Red Sox home game against the Red Sox, it might be 50-50, but at least you're filling that building up and bringing some revenue to the team. And I'll just be curious to see how they go about expanding this thing. I mean, the first month, this is 9,000, and then, okay, month two, let's make it 12,000, month three, 15,000, and just incremental jump ups. I feel like that would be appropriate to some extent. But I mean, I think there's definitely a demand out there for Rays fans to go and see baseball. I mean, they capped spring training attendance at around 1,500 per game, and all the spring training tickets for the entire season sold out within 5 minutes online. So there definitely is a demand for baseball and a demand for people to go out there and do something as well. So I would imagine that there shouldn't be a problem filling up the place, at least, you know, whatever the limited capacity is with that.
All right, man, let's get to this year. And I think for us to appropriately get to what's going on with you guys this year, we have to backtrack to the end of last year, because it seems like there were some, you know, there was obviously an opportunity for the Rays to win a World Series. You guys had a hell of a run through the playoffs. As we call him, Rice Aroni, you actually called it on our show earlier in the year when we did our beginning of the year part two, that he was going to be just a big player and someone who was going to be to look out for the playoffs. And this dude was looked every bit of an MVP in the playoffs. He dominated the playoffs. But the way that it ended, you know, towards the end with Blake Snell, game six, I apologize for bringing back up bad memories, but it does seem like it has something to do with the way that the offseason, you know, kind of rolled out. Snell obviously traded to San Diego. The Rays bring in what seems like a plethora of veteran pitchers to, you know, throw as much spaghetti on the wall almost, or, you know, see if they can get one last go out of these guys, which, to be honest, I don't doubt, because Tampa has been able to do that with multiple people. So, yeah, curious to your thoughts ending the season and just what that taste was going into the offseason with Snell being traded.
Yeah, it's one of those things where since Snell has been off the roster, I guess thankfully haven't really had to relive game six, because the local media isn't asking questions about, oh, looking back on game six, how are you entering the season, so on and so forth. So it's almost
welcome to the Yankees podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. So look, I think that after game six, things had kind of been ramping up to that point of Blake Snell and the Rays kind of, okay, it's probably time for us to go our separate ways, even though he, to pretty much 29 other MLB teams, he has a very team-friendly deal left with 3 years, $39 million on that contract. The Rays aren't like every other organization out there. And there have just been things with, you know, when they traded Tommy Pham, he expressed his disappointment with that. Game six, he added Scott Boras as his agent. A lot of things going on with that. And he also expressed disappointment very vividly about not being able to go deep into ball games. And that's been the Rays' MO of late, is, hey, we're going to have starters be five and dive guys. We're going to bring in the bullpen sixth inning and try to close this thing up. And Blake Snell, former Cy Young Award winner, he wants to be able to go 7-8. He wants to get his chance at a complete game. And maybe he'll get that opportunity in San Diego. I don't know. But yeah, talk about throwing spaghetti on a wall, because they of course, not just traded Blake Snell for, I think, four very good prospects and players that will definitely help this team in time over the next several years. They also opted not to bring back Charlie Morton on a team option. And if I was the Rays, and I know this is sort of heartless in a way, I would have picked up his option, then traded him to the Braves or somebody else and try to get something in return. But I guess there was so much mutual respect from both those sides that they opted, like, if we're bringing you back, we're bringing you back to keep you. We don't want to bring you back and then give you this impression you're going to be on the team and then trade you a week or two or a month later, or whatever it is. So what they've essentially done is they've unloaded a lot of payroll off the starting rotation and in return added four veteran guys who have question marks, have a history of success, but you just don't know what you're going to get from those guys, whether it's Chris Archer, Colin McHugh, Michael Wacha, Rich Hill, the list goes on and on. And I guess the idea and the thinking along those lines of, and they brought in all those four guys for a combined $13.8 million, which is less than what Charlie Morton would have made with the Rays at 15 mil. So really what they're thinking is, these four guys, if they can give us a combined 450 innings, the most that Charlie Morton's going to give you is maybe 175. So you're going from 60 to 162. We just need guys that can give us innings any way possible. That's part of it. The other part of it is they have a really, really good stable of prospects in the minor leagues that are going to be knocking on the door in the next couple months, whether it's Shane McClanahan, Josh Fleming, who saw a lot of action, Joe Ryan, Luis Patino, Brendan McKay, Brent Honeywell, a lot of guys there that are chomping at the bit. So once those guys are fully stretched out, and inevitably once Rich Hill goes down with something or Chris Archer goes down with something, then they can start to bring those guys up sometime along midseason, late season, and hopefully have the depth to get through 162. So that's kind of what their line of thinking there is, while at the same time trying to save a buck or two, which is the Rays way, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. So that's exactly it. You know, everybody's looking at Tampa and saying, well, they lost Morton, they lost Snell. This is clearly going to be the Yankees division. This is, and which I don't disagree. I think it is the Yankees division to lose at this point. But that being said, Tampa has been able to, you know, turn these no-name guys in their bullpen into, you know, the quote horse, the stable of horses, and they've been able to make a lot from very little. Or they'll identify a guy who's had injury history and for whatever reason make some tweaks, change his you know, his situation within the team and gotten a lot out of him. They've been able to add a lot of value from I'd say little. And that's, I think that's one of the big strengths from Kevin Cash and an organization. So when I see that Snell is gone and that Morton is gone, yes, it's a hit to the team, but I have no doubt that they're going to fill that piece with someone else and probably someone I've never heard of. And this guy is going to come in and, you know, this guy or these guys and do well. It's just, they have a track record of doing this. And the fact that, you know, they got Archer, Waka, Hill, McHugh, like you mentioned, it's possible that one of them, you know, have a bit of a resurgence. Would not surprise me if Archer all of a sudden found, you know, a little bit more of a semblance of being a pitcher and had some success. So I by no means take them, you know, for granted. And I think that they are going to be a very serious threat in the division. So curious your thoughts on like what your expectations are for the AL East specifically with this, you know, new roster.
Yeah, that's a great question, a great point. And I go back to it. Like last year, who would have thought that Ryan Thompson, John Curtis, and Aaron Sliggers would be a thing, that they would have success? Nobody had really heard of these guys beforehand. And then we see them and they have immediate success. And it's like, wow, maybe the Rays have found something. And I think that's what they're going to do again with guys like Jeffrey Springs and Chris Mazza and a bunch of bulk guys. And the other thing too with that is, I know that, look, Nick Anderson, that bad news about him, he's going to miss at least half the year with what he's dealing with, elbow issues, and the Rays have to find a new de facto closer, which I think, you know, between Pete Fairbanks and Diego Castillo, they should be able to do. But, you know, they also have guys that aren't getting talked about this year that have been contributors to the Rays in the past and are expected for big roles in the bullpen. Cody Reed, for example, Andrew Kittredge, Chaz Rowe, those guys are finally healthy and ready to go. So that's going to be big for them. I think, you know, you look at the rotation 1-5, it definitely isn't a top 10 rotation anymore, maybe not even a top 15 rotation, but I think they have so many arms that can pitch in and fill in that I think they'll find a way to get through it. It wouldn't surprise me in the least if they've got like 10 or 12 guys by the end of the year that have like 80, 90, 100 innings between them. I think there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be pitching a lot of innings and a lot of mixing and matching from that standpoint. And I think this is going to be, again, we're going from 60 to 162. While the Rays on paper, at least their starting staff and maybe not even their bullpen anymore, it doesn't look as elite as in last year. I think, you know, come to the dog days of summer, September, August, you get late in the season where I think teams are just going to be hampered by injuries and ailments. And it's going to be like an NFL season where it's just like, we just need a guy that can go out there and throw us a couple innings. And I think that's where the Rays have an advantage. You know, their top couple, their best couple players probably aren't on the same par or page with the Yankees or the Blue Jays, but I think their depth, their, you know, 15 through 26, 26 through 40, really, really helps them out and gives them a boost. And I think the Rays, again, probably the homer in me a little bit, I think they find a way to make the playoffs. And I think they find a way to, I wouldn't say win the division, but definitely secure a wild card spot. And somewhere between the range of 88 to 92 games is what I'm looking for, at the least, probably around that ballpark as of right now. We also have to remember, I mean, you know, the Rays have never really been known for their offense. That's never been their calling card, but they're returning pretty much everybody in their lineup from last season. And that was a team that almost averaged 5 runs a game. And they might be able to do that this year, especially if you get a full season health-wise from Austin Meadows and Brandon Lau and Yandy Diaz. And we see what Randy Arozarena can do over a full season. So I think that's definitely going to help them as well. So I think second in the division, I would say, you know, if I was to rank it right now, I'd probably say Yankees 1, Rays 2, Blue Jays 3, big back and forth between those three teams. four Red Sox, and then five, I mean, who else but the Orioles?
Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox could compete. Who knows? The Orioles might get some young guys to play out of their shoes and play a little bit better with the Red Sox. That'll be an interesting head-to-head. Interesting for two fan bases, but so staying with the pitching before we get into a little bit more of the offense, because I think the offense is really interesting. What are your expectations for Tyler Glass now? You know, we saw some good things from him, but I mean, at this point, he really does have to take over as that ace, as that number one guy. Do you expect him, one, do you think that's a must? Does he have to come out there and dominate every time he gets the ball, or, you know, the majority of times? Does he have to clearly make himself that number one guy? And what are your expectations for Tyler Glass now?
Yeah, I think, you know, throughout spring training, the storyline has been him fine tuning his secondary stuff. He's learned a slider, which apparently looks pretty good. I guess it's a combination between a slider and a cutter, and that is in complement to his high 90s fastball and his 12-6 curveball. And he's toyed around in the past with the changeup, but really it's just a slow fastball that allows hitters to time up on it. So it looks like, I mean, he's legitimately going to use this slider slash cutter into regular season games, which is huge to have that third pitch. That's what you need if you want to be an ace, top of the rotation guy. And this is his year. This is his opportunity. He's no longer, behind the scenes of Blake Snell and Charlie Morton and others. This is his first opening day start. And this is a year, if you want to really light up and maybe get a contract extension or get that big boost in arbitration, you need to show out. I mean, he's shown, look, he's got the stuff. He's got the talent to be an ace, but he's not quite there yet. We've seen his postseason struggles. We've seen times where he gets hit a little bit and then he just loses his composure and it becomes a bad start. And we've seen that against bad teams like the Orioles, where he just, for one reason or the other, implodes. And we also have to see him pitch a full season. That is something we have yet to see from him in a Rays uniform. Yeah, I guess we sort of saw it last year, but he hasn't thrown more than 111 innings in a regular season. So you need this guy to at least, I think, 150, at least, 28 to 32 starts. You need him to be available and out there every time. And, you know, I think he's ready for it. He's been in baseball long enough. He's 27 going on 28 years old. He's one of the union reps for the team. He's ready for the limelight, and I think he's going to have a lot of success, but it's just about putting it all together for an entire season. We saw it in a little bit. We saw glimpses of it in 2019, where he looked like he was going to win a Cy Young before he went down with a forearm strain. So it's just about being able to continue that for a regular season and into the postseason too, because that's still sort of a knock on his resume there. But and he's got to pick everybody else up too. Like, I mean, you look at this rotation and your number two is Ryan Yarbrough. And Ryan Yarbrough is a very good pitcher. He's a solid pitcher, but he's been used in a variety of roles as a bulk guy, an opener. He lost his arbitration case. He doesn't give you necessarily the fire or the cachet of other number two starters in baseball. So if Tyler Glass now can carry that load through game one or the first game of a series or whatever it may be, I think that's going to be critically important. Look, I don't think he's going to win a Cy Young this season, but you know, at least maybe garnering some votes, I think, would be critical and huge for him. And he's definitely capable of that, assuming he stays healthy. I mean, he's just a freak athletically, 6'8", with his arm length. I mean, he throws a 9,900 mile an hour fastball that probably looks, you know, probably 105, 106 to hitters because of the extension that he gets on his throws. And, you know, a guy that size is just about also maintaining his mechanics too and not getting out of that during the regular season. But I expect a really, really good year from Glasnow. The time is now for him, for sure.
Time is definitely now. I think the time is now for potentially some of your prospects as well. We'll get to Wander Franco. I know that he's probably of the three of these guys on the back burner of them. But Luis Patino is a guy that I identify as a wild card for me. There are two X factor guys on this team that I'm not going to say scare me, but I have my eye on to see how they're doing when they come up and the ability that they're going to add to that. I think he's a guy that could add, you know, some real electricity to the rotation. And I think you're saying end of middle of the year, you know, towards the end of the year. What are realistic expectations for him and when you might see him? Because I do expect him to be an active contributor at some point. Wander Franco, you know, who knows? He's still young. He still hasn't played a ton of organized ball in the minor leagues. And last year was not a great thing for his development, really any minor leaguer. But Pettina, what are your expectations for him? What do you think he's going to be coming up? Because with the guys that you are throwing spaghetti on the wall, I have a feeling the Rays are going to be dipping into the farm a little bit earlier.
Yeah, that's interesting because Pettina absolutely, I think, is an electric talent that in time will be, he might be atop the rotation. That's what the Rays want from him in trading Blake Snell to try to get a guy like that. But we also have to remember, I mean, he got a stint with the Padres last year, probably was a little bit premature just coming back from A-ball, and he's just 21 years old. And I think the Rays are going to be very, very patient and very cautious with him as they are with all of their arms. And it's funny because I haven't really heard as much talk about him necessarily as some of the others that are maybe more refined and developed as far as pitching prospects. Like if the Rays are in need of a starter like now, from some of those high profile prospects, I would look at a guy probably like Shane McClanahan first. And after that, maybe Brent Honeywell. That might be a guy too. I think there's other guys that they may turn to, but before Pettina, because he's so young and there's still things I think that they want to work on and definitely stretch him out in the minor leagues. But I think there's certainly a point where he could be a contributor. But I mean, if we get to the end of the year, I would not be surprised if the number four, number five spot goes to Shane McClanahan, who just looked absolutely nasty in spring training and is a guy from the left side that throws 100 and has a nasty breaking ball too. And he seems to have the confidence, and it seems like this might be the year for his breakout. He got some action in Double A. He's pitched in college. He's a local kid, went to the University of South Florida. He made history, baseball history, in making an appearance, making his MLB debut in a postseason game against the Yankees, no less. I don't think it worked out too well, but I think that's a guy that there's been more talk about him and some others before Luis Pettina, and a guy that always seems to get left in the shuffle because he's not a high velocity guy and he's not super flashy, but just has really good command and composure and doesn't lack for the moment, is Josh Fleming. That's another guy I think that's going to get big opportunities, but I'm not sure if Pettina necessarily earns a rotation spot by the end of this year, but it might be a thing where we just need a live arm in the bullpen to get us through, you know, if it's September or in the playoffs or whatever it may be, because he's still an extremely, extremely young kid, and the Rays probably want to take their time with him too.
Yeah, that's interesting because he did get some major league time. So you're seeing down there that even though he was brought up because it was early, that they still want to keep him in the minor leagues, develop him even more, and then possibly bring him up later in the season. The little I've seen of him, he looked electric. I think he's going to be a very good player. And it's just the way that the Rays have, you know, transformed some of these pitching, not even prospects, just some of these projects even, that they get a guy that has the high caliber talent and the tools. That is one of those areas that I'm definitely circling, and I have my eye on the development of that kid because I have a feeling it's going to be something that's going to be a thorn in the Yankee side for a very long time. So he's controlled. Yeah. It's just one of those pitchers that's going to be in Tampa for a while.
Yeah, and what the Rays do with that and why they have so much success is basically what they tried to simplify things for these players. The Rays are such an analytically driven franchise, and they focus on what a guy can do rather than what he can't do. And if he's got this one strength or these two strengths, okay, focus on that and try to expose that. And a big thing for them too is just like, you're basically a major leaguer. You got here. You got to this point. Trust your stuff. Just throw the ball, over the plate, and good things will happen. Yeah, you might get, there might be some contact, but we've got a really good defense behind us too. And that's really the big calling card for them is just trust your stuff and focus on this one thing. If it's throwing a curveball more or throwing the fastball more at the top of the zone, like they boil it down to where they've got all these smart guys in the front office, and then they've got a conduit in the pitching coach and Kyle Snyder and other on field guys. And they kind of boil it down and simplify it for these, you know, pro baseball players to understand and go out and execute. And I think that's another big reason for their success, where, you know, some of these other franchises might get tied down into the minutia and okay, we're going to be super smart and super analytical and that's fine, but you got to find a way to impart that wisdom to the players and for them to really have confidence in that too. And it's shown it's worked over the years. I mean, every year there's always going to be a new guy that comes out and breaks out and has a great season. And I'm sure there'll be a couple guys with the Rays this year that we didn't really have on the radar that was like, wow, where did that guy come from? And it's always fun to see those guys like that. And usually what happens is the next year, once the Rays have sort of reinvented this player, they ship him off to another team. John Curtis is no longer on the team, for example. He's with the Marlins. Aaron Sliger's with the Angels. And they just kind of go around and around in a circle.
You've heard us talking about it before, and we're back again to talk to you about hosting your own podcast here at Blue Wire. And there's no better place to host than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everybody the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show posted out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all the other listening platforms. The best part is you can get all of this for only $15 a month, which is just your hosting fee. That's the same rate as all other hosting sites would charge you for an initial setup. So you're going to be paying that anyway. So you might as well be doing it at Blue Wire Hustle, where you get all those other great features I just mentioned. So if you're ready to do more than just listening to me and Scott talk about your favorite team, then make your voice heard in Hustle. Acceptance into this program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, you can go to bwhustle.com/join. You can check out the description box for this episode and find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join. Again, check it out in the show notes if you are interested.
All right, going to the offense before we get out of here. The offense, like you mentioned before, averaging, what, we said 5 runs a game. They're a talented offense. Having a full year of Rosarena is going to be, you know, something obviously that they're looking to expand upon for, you know, making a dynamic offense. The guy, I expect him to be good. I mean, I see no reason why he's not going to not carry over maybe what he did in the playoffs, but he's going to be an active player, a very big contributor to this team. He's a good player. He's fun to watch, to be honest. Austin Meadows is a guy though that I have my eye on as a rebound player, as someone who's, you know, trying to get back in to the swing of things, obviously, and make big impact with big production. And I think he's a guy that you know, started putting together some better at bats at the end of last year into the playoffs even. And I think that he's really a big X factor for your team, because if he's right, if he's healthy and he's able to you know, make good of his talent, that's a huge, huge bat in the middle of your lineup. So just curious as to the rest of the offense, but you know, the impact of a healthy, you know, guy like Austin Meadows, who's really rolling. And then you add a Rosarena who, you know, adds some protection. So you have a little bit more protection in that lineup. And then also Wander Franco, if you could talk just a little bit about him after that, what you see, are we going to see him this year at all? Is this, are we still waiting for Wander Franco?
Yeah, all good questions from that standpoint. I do think Randy will come back to earth a little bit. I mean, he's not Babe Ruth, I don't think, anyways. Who knows? No. Maybe he had to wait until he was 26 to become the next Babe Ruth or Barry Bonds or whatever it may be. But I think that, you know, there's a little bit of a book on him now, and I think teams are going to not throw him as many fastballs, try to get him to chase on more breaking stuff. You just hope that, you know, the success he had last season didn't go to his head in the off season, but I think he's a pretty hard worker. I mean, he gets, he actually had some little bumps and bruises because he was taking too many batting practice swings. So he just loves baseball. And kind of a fun tie in there, the Tampa Bay Rowdies, which is sort of like, I guess like a second division pro soccer team here in the Tampa Bay area. Randy's brother is a goalkeeper, and he was just signed to the Tampa Bay Rowdies. So maybe part of that, and also the Rays own the Rowdies, so they own that soccer team. So I wonder if that was a little bit by design and bringing his brother to Tampa Bay to maybe give him some comfort and some familiarity there and having sort of a buddy to hang out with and keep him company. Because we know Randy from Cuba, and you know, there's a little bit of a language barrier there and a cultural barrier, but I think he'll I what I've thought from Randy, again, assuming he stays healthy for full season, if he can give you sort of a 2020 season and bat 270, I think that that's pretty good. Maybe a little bit more than that. Maybe 25 to 28 home runs and, you know, 22 stolen bases, whatever it may be. But he's definitely not a, he's not Mike Trout yet. He's not Mookie Betts yet. And that's another thing too. He's got to work on his defensive prowess a little bit. But Austin Meadows, that's a guy that I absolutely think he's in store for a huge season, a bounce back season, a season that's similar to what he did in 2019. I mean, 2020 was just a lost season, him dealing with COVID and not really recovering from it. When he did recover from it, he was out of shape and never really comfortable. It was just like, hey, bud, we need a body, step in and take your lumps and bruises here. And he just, he did not look himself. He was about 15, 20 pounds overweight. You can tell entering this spring training, he was in much better shape. He hit 4 home runs, I think, in spring training, really pulling and turning on the ball. The timing was much better, especially on those pitches down and in. He's going to have to work on one thing that really hurt him was chasing the down and away pitches and being late to those pitches last year. So I think he's certainly going to be able to make adjustments and return to that middle of the order presence and that guy that got some MVP votes in 2019. So he's going to be huge. Another guy that, you know, wasn't mentioned, but I think could be in store for, I don't know if you call it a bounce back year, but just much better than last year, Yoshi Tsutsugo. He's going to be in store for a more pronounced role this season with the injury of Tommy of G-Man Choi. Yoshi will play some first base, some third base, maybe some corner outfield. I think having a full season now, not going from the States to Japan, back dealing with the pandemic and everything, he'll actually kind of be settled down a little bit. And I think getting adjusted to major league pitching and in the fastballs, how they're higher velocity, more movement, he seems to be more comfortable on that end. And I think the Rays have discussed having him lead off. I mean, he's got the profile for sure. He's got the power. He's got the plate discipline. So I think that's a guy that could really emerge. I mean, the Rays are paying him to be that guy. I know it doesn't sound much to the Yankees, but they're paying him $7.5 million a year, which I think is the third highest salary for the Rays this season. But so those are a couple guys definitely to watch this season, of course. And I think what'll help is the outfield depth too will allow Randy and Austin Meadows and other guys to get rest and get off their feet, because this is going to be a very long season. So if you have to DH a couple times a week, so be it. That's fine. We have enough guys that can carry the water, whether it's Manny Margot, Kevin Kiermaier, Brett Phillips, maybe if he gets healthy, and guys like that. As far as Wander goes, I still think, sure, I think he could make his major league debut this year, maybe when rosters go to 28, and you know, maybe he's a postseason add-on if it gets to that point. But we still have to remember that he lost a season of minor league ball last year. He just turned 20 years old. He hasn't had some 500 at-bats in the minors, and the Rays have a lot of middle infield depth. I mean, if Willy Adames goes down tomorrow, if he gets some sort of drastic injury, they're calling up, well, first, they'd probably just shift Joey Wendell or Mike Brasso to short, but if not that, if they had to call somebody up, it'd be Taylor Walls, the best defensive prospect, arguably, in the Rays system, and a guy who's versatile at that. Like, and then after that, probably Vidal Brujan. And then after that, maybe Wander Franco. I think, look, Wander, everything I've read, he's going to be a great player in time, but the Rays also like to take their time with these prospects. They don't want to rush them just to rush them. And you also have the service time considerations and the Super 2 status and everything that's tied in with that. So I don't see him coming up before July, to be honest, unless just a whole rash of guys go down with injury. And to the Rays' credit, they've given him a ton of action in spring training, given him a ton of at-bats. But I still think they want to see him go through his lumps at AA and AAA and go from there. The other thing, too, is like he might not be a shortstop at the big league level. The Rays might choose to move him at second base or third base. And it's hard to get better. It's hard to really fine tune those skills if you're sitting on the bench at the major league level, or you're trying to just manage everything that needs to be managed when the bright lights are on at the major league level and traveling from city to city, instead of just being able to work on your game on a backfield somewhere or in Double A, where there's not so much attention. So I think there's some huge value into that, where he's not just going to be a shortstop. He might be, they want him to learn multiple positions, things he hasn't really done before in his career, because he's, you know, once a shortstop, always a shortstop kind of a guy. So I think that's the other thing too, is, you know, I think the bat's definitely there for sure. I think the mentality could be there in time, but they want him to make sure that the defense is there. Cause at the end of the day, this team is about pitching and defense, and they want to make sure that he's ready for that. So I still think, and they got to figure out what they're going to do with Adamas long-term. I mean, Adamas is a really good player too. I think he's going to be entering arbitration relatively soon. So he's still got several years of control. He's a top of the step guy. He's a guy, he's a legit clubhouse leader, a legit vocal leader, a legit fun guy to be around in the clubhouse. And that's important, is keeping the clubhouse light and loose. And that's something Adamas does. And I know that it seems like we're always looking for that next guy. We're always looking for that next prospect. Who's the next great thing? But we've got a really good player right here in Willy Adamas. I know he strikes out a ton, but and he fails to hit at the trop. But caveats aside, he's still, at the end of the day, a really good player, you know, 2-3-4 win player that he might be on the roster for the next couple of years too. And that kind of ties in with Wander maybe learning a new position at the minor leagues and then seeing where his development is from that standpoint.
Well, I mean, one thing that we've seen with prospects, Yankees, across the league with other organizations as well, is that these top prospects, if they decide that he's a shortstop, he's going to play shortstop, but they're not going to bring him up for a platoon job. They're not going to bring him up to sit on the bench. Like you said, there's no, especially after you lose a year last year, that's a development, you know, just a huge problem waiting to happen. There's no reason for that. I wouldn't be surprised if they were to slide Adamas to another position. And when ready, you know, you have Wander Franco, who's going to be the long-term at wherever he's positioned, right? He's going to be that guy for however long. I could see Adamas even sliding over and making room for a guy like Franco if he is the shortstop that they think he is and they get the time. The fact that he's got to have those minor league at-bats, like you said, identify where he's going to be playing long-term, I think will affect. I mean, it seems to me that Tampa would slide people over. Kevin Cash is so known for doing that, that a guy like Yonder Franco, it seems like he's going to be a staple in one position, and they just needed to figure out what that position is going to be.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things too. I mean, at 19, 20 years old, he's already very well built. So what's his body type going to look like by the time he's 25, 26, 27? He might very much outgrow the shortstop position. He's already got a lot of strength, and you know, if he adds another 15, 20 pounds, just because of biology, does he have the movement skills and the quickness to maintain that spot? And I think that's going to be huge. So they've also, I think there's also been discussions about center field as a possibility too. So I think they're going to try a lot of different things with him and see what sticks from there. I don't know if they would, as long as Adamas is on the roster, I don't know if they would move him off of shortstop. I think he has shown enough and proven enough to be a shortstop, but I think what could happen maybe is if there is a time where you see Wander and Adamas playing at the same time, there might be times where the Rays can play the platoon split a little bit in Wander's favor because he is a switch hitter. So, and that's the other thing. I mean, that was a great point. Like they're not going to bring him up just to have him sit on the bench and to be a 10th or an 11th man on the bench. They want him to be playing every day and to get those reps. And I just don't see a spot as of right now. Look, there could be a rash of injuries by the end of the season, but you're not taking Joey Wendell's spot. You're not taking Yandy Diaz's spot. You're not taking Brandon Lau's spot. So you're going to take Brett Phillips' spot, last man on the bench? Like that just doesn't really make sense.
No, injuries definitely have to be in play for him to be there. It's got to make sense long-term too. Like, yeah, they're not going to plug him in just for a short-term fix. Unless it's at the end of the season and they're trying to catch lightning in a bottle. Maybe they make some concessions at that point.
And that's where the big question too is Adamas. I mean, there has been some rumors this offseason about, you know, possibly shipping him off to, I know the Reds were kicking the tires a little bit, and I'm sure there'll be other teams as well. If, you know, this is going to be a big free agency year for some of the big name shortstops, the Trevor Stories, maybe Francisco Lindor, Carlos Correa, so many others, but there might be a team that is looking for a veteran, more cheap shortstop option that, I mean, Willy Adamas is still a pretty young kid too. I think, you know, 24, 25 years old, that's got a lot of play left. in his game, and maybe a change of scenery where, for whatever reason, I don't know if that it's the batter's eye or some vision issue, he just struggles at the drop for whatever it may be. But that he could be a really valuable, inexpensive piece for another franchise. And also that would then open up an opportunity for whether it's Vidal Brujan, Wander Franco, Taylor Walls, the list goes on and on. I mean, that is the thing. Like the Rays have so many middle infield types that it's like, how are we going to find all these guys? I didn't even mention Xavier Edwards and Greg Jones, who at some point seemingly will be knocking on the door as well. A lot of those guys switch hitters too, which is sort of a fun thing to think about as the Rays try to maybe not have to worry about the platoons as much. And, you know, as the game is changing with, you know, we might be seeing bigger bases and dead end balls where, you know, speed and athleticism and versatility is the name of the game. Yeah. That could be something where the Rays could, they might be playing into that advantage there in the next decade or so.
Cool, man. Well, you know, I think it's going to be a fun season. I know we're all looking forward to a full year of these battles. It'll be fun again, get some rivalry going back into a full 162. I know I look forward to that. It's always good to have, to me, it's good to have better competition in the division because it makes the entire year just that much more fun and entertaining. So I'm excited for it. I think the Tampa is going to be a good team. But yeah, man, I appreciate your time. Everybody go give Kevin a follow. He's at @KevinWeiss_ on Twitter. If you want to stay in tune with what Tampa is doing so that you can prepare for all of the games that the Yankees and Tampa play interdivision. So Kevin, thanks, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Of course. Thank you. And let me just say this. I can't wait until the first, hopefully this will happen this year, where Mike Brasso will be going one-on-one with Aroldis Chapman. I'd love to see that fight back and forth again, if and when that happens this year, however it works out.
There'll be a suspension in the beginning of the year that we all forgot about. If we're like, oh yeah, I forgot.
What, the two-game suspension? The three-game, yes. What is it?
I think it's two-game suspension that Chapman's going to be, yeah. So yeah, we'll be without our closer to start the year. What a terrible... the future process.
Well, we're without our closer for like 3 months. So, you know,
you guys just enter closer here. Just put name in here, yeah. And there's your closer. So,
that's the thing. Sure, the Rays set a record last season, or tied a record with most guys that got a save. They had a dozen guys that got a save last year. I mean, part of that was probably by necessity, part by design, just showing that, hey, we want you to get this experience of pitching in the ninth inning if and when there's a time where we need you to pitch in the ninth inning. So I think if there's a team that can manage without their de facto closer, it is the Rays. And Nick Anderson didn't look so good in the postseason. The Rays kind of ran him into the ground there too. So,
all right, man. Well, good luck this year. You know, hopefully we both get two healthy years, because that would be fun to watch for both sides. But yeah,
likewise, we'll talk, I think it. Yeah,
we'll talk.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good battle. Yeah, between us, you guys, and the Blue Jays. Maybe a three-horse race there, so.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter @BronxPinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.